Good morning. We will convene as the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Don Jardine from Markleyville, and I am the board vice chair. The board chair, Peter Pumphrey, was unable to make today's meeting. I want to thank you for coming to our meeting. We welcome your comments, ideas, and participation because they help us do a better job. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. Keith Dias from Rosemont. Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. Eric Sandell from Truckee. And Kimberly Cox from Hallandale. The executive officer is Patty Koyumjin. Ms. Koyumjin, would you please introduce the staff?
Good morning, everyone. I'd be happy to introduce our staff. We have our assistant executive officer, Doug Smith, in the audience. We have Patrice Copeland from our Victor Office, our division manager, and Scott Ferguson, who you'll hear from later, a division manager from our Tahoe office here attending. We have Kathy Odom to, well, she was there. There she went. She moved on me.
I'm sorry.
Who's our board clerk, and Elizabeth Barrett, our legal counsel. Also in the audience, we have Bruce Warden, who you'll be hearing from shortly. Tom Brown, we'll hear from him too. Tiffany Steinhardt, Jan Zimmerman. And two of our newer employees I'd like to introduce, Alicia Borkman, for our scientific aide. She's working in our Department of Defense. Don't be shy, you could stand up. Department of Defense and Site Cleanup Unit. She's a recent graduate, congratulations, from Cal Poly Pomona with a Bachelor of Science in Geography and a minor in Geology. So we're excited to have her part of our regional board, so welcome. We also have Christopher Avalos, an engineering geologist who has joined us. He has nearly 15 years experience in environment consulting, primarily Edwards Air Force Base. That will come in handy. He received his Bachelor of Science in Geology from the University of California, UCLA, and in 2002, his professional geologist license in 2013. He also joins our Department of Defense unit and is now working on the Fort Irwin logistics base site, Barstow Projects, and helps with China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station. So lots of work ahead for both of you. Thank you.
The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Please feel free to comment on any item so that our decision will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card that's out on the desk and hand the card to Kathy Orderman, our board clerk. Also, please respect board members, staff, presenters, and your fellow citizens. Everyone's views should be heard. If a lot of people want to speak, I may place time limits on presentations. If you have any written materials as part of the agenda item, please hand copies to Kathy, and she will distribute them. So that we can have an accurate administrative record, please speak after I call your name and invite you up to the lectern. Please speak into the microphone so the board and the public can hear you. And with that, I'll move to our first item of today. We will now turn to item 6E. The board will adjourn to closed session to discuss litigation. When the board returns in approximately half an hour, our next item will be item 7, public forum. We'll go into closed session.
We are leaving.
We are leaving.
You can stay.
You can stay. We have a quorum. I will go to item 7, public forum. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the Water Board? I'll go then to item 8. Consider approval of local agency management program for the City of California City. Yes, Mr. Mike Cooney?
Oh, Mr. Cass.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Vice Chair and other board members. My name is Jahiel Cass. I'm a civil engineer, senior civil engineer in our Victorville office. And I'll be discussing with you briefly this morning about City of California City's local agency management program, which is the city's intended approach to evaluate and accept permit applications for on-site wastewater treatment systems or septic systems. On-site systems is a little broader than the conventional septic system because it includes alternatives or supplemental treatment systems as well. And I do just want to add one point of clarification to the agenda green sheet. We had on page 8-2 in the third paragraph indicated that the city has a secondary wastewater treatment plant, which is true, they do, but they also have a tertiary wastewater treatment train that during the summer provides recycled water to the golf course. So obviously the percentage of flow treated by tertiary versus secondary is variable, but over the year about 60% of the water is used for recycled water on the golf course. So this morning I would like to briefly discuss what the objectives of the Local Agency Management Program, or the LAMP is called, and under the State Board's policy, tiers are set up. Tier 1 are the statewide standards. Tier 2 is the local program that is proposed. Some of the density criteria and the scope of coverage that this LAMP would contain, and the assessment program that the city would have to do to comply with the policy. And then I'll make a recommendation. So in terms of LAMP objectives, the policy itself defines the criteria that is applied not only statewide, but for a LAMP, the criteria that would have to be included within a LAMP. And the policy allows for local site-specific consideration of soil types, the development patterns of a community in terms of the density and the growth patterns, water sources, the availability or the proximity of surface water bodies if they may exist. And California City's program has taken into account their local community needs. Now, some unique things about California City are that the city itself is very large. It is one of the larger cities geographically in the state and in our region, of course. Its population is small or modest. It's about 10,000 person population. But it has been divided historically into two communities called the first and the second community. The first community developed and subdivided first, and the second community later. The first community has most of the current residential population and growth. Those lots, as they were subdivided, are smaller, meaning they're like 10 to 14,000 square feet, so somewhere between a quarter to a half an acre. And they were subdivided in the 1960s before our basin plan was revised in 1989 to establish the one single family resident per half acre requirement, or the 500 gallon per acre per day requirement. So when that basin plan was amended and we worked on memorandum of understanding to work out an agreement where a local agency would incorporate our basin plan criteria, we had to make some accommodation for California City. And the approach I'll show you on a map is that we subdivided the city, the first community, into quadrants or zones, and it said as long as your overall density within that zone remains no more than 2 dwelling units per acre, then you're in compliance with the policy. And as you'll see, the city does keep track of that and will report that to the Water Board. The first community also is the partially sewered portion of the city. And we'll see a map here coming up. This actually is the city boundaries. This pointer doesn't work on the TV screen, but the angled left line is Highway 14 that goes north and south from Lancaster, Palmdale up to Ridgecrest. The bottom line is the north edge of Edwards Air Force Base. This is Highway 58. And then in the east, at the east corner, is Highway 395 that goes north from Cramer Junction up to Ridgecrest. So the city is very large. And the first community is on the left. The second community is on the right in terms of the core areas. As I mentioned, the regional board's current density criteria that's in the basin plan is what the city proposes to incorporate into its LAMP. So they are going to essentially continue the same density criteria that we currently have in our basin plan. The next slide will show actually, and here is where I do wish I had a pointer. So I'm thinking that you all have a screen, right? So you see in front of you what we're having. So we're going to have to do this orally. This is the city's first community. There is an ephemeral stream called Cache Creek that runs along the south from the west, curves around, and heads to the north down towards Cane Dry Lake. The red and the green lines are showing the existing sewer collection system. The wastewater plant is in the northeast corner of the city. And so this collection system collects sewage and delivers it to the plant. The quadrants that I mentioned are the yellow boxes. And they're fairly regular, although there are some irregular shapes. Each box was set up to contain essentially an equivalent number of lots. I'm thinking roughly, and there's folks in the city that will briefly speak, about 100 lots per quadrant or tract, more or less. Okay, so as long as within each one of those yellow boxes called zones on this map, the overall density did not exceed 2 per acre, then the city was still in compliance with the basin plan criteria. So most of the development in the city is along what I call Main Street. I think it's called California City Boulevard, an east-west boulevard that runs right through the middle of the city, and this is the sewered part of the city, with some zones or quadrants becoming more developed on septic relative to what would be allowed, although they don't exceed the 2 units per acre criteria, they're approaching that. So the city calls those priority zones. That's the purple or the gray hashed units here, meaning we're going to keep a close eye on them because they are approaching the density. And the solution will have to be something. We'll either have to allow no more septic development or expand the sewers, allow alternative treatment or something. So that's the reason that some of these zones are purple and gray. This figure here shows the current status, which is really a summary of one of the enclosures where there is a table showing the status of each one of the city's zones. But overall, you can see the density is still less than 100% of build-out for either the D zones, which are the yellow zones on the previous map, or the P zones, which are the gray zones, which are more heavily developed. So with the annual reports that the city will provide as part of their program, they'll keep an eye on this. And the approach is to allow continued development up to the maximum allowed density and then work on other alternatives at that point. But the growth, I have to say, is fairly small in the city. In other words, the rate of population increase has been fairly slow over the years, so there's not, in the foreseeable future, a great increase in population expected. The city would allow one of the alternatives for addressing areas and, for example, commercial properties that would be proposed in one of these higher density zones is to put in supplemental treatment system with on-site discharge or disposal. And the LAMP does allow for that. The city indicates that they would seek Water Board staff recommendations. Of course, one of the new items coming out of the State Board's policy is that no longer could the board staff or the executive officer approve alternative system design. The only option in the future after a LAMP is approved when a site is referred to the Water Board is to get waste discharge requirements issued in some fashion. So the city may either permit some of these on-site supplemental systems or they may refer them to the board for adoption under waste discharge requirements. The on-site treatment system policy says we need to keep an eye on the effect of discharges from on-site systems, and the approach for that is to have a water quality assessment program, which is in the form of annual reports. Basically, it's data that would be submitted, you know, number of new permits issued, number of failed systems, number of enforcements or complaints that were received. With every 5 years, a more rigorous, detailed review of the effect of these on-site system discharge on water quality. And that's the 5-year assessment, which will happen, you know, on track. Each agency that does have a LAMP for the, you know, foreseeable future. So there are these 5-year milestones that will be an opportunity to look at the effect cumulatively of on-site systems within a community or a county on the receiving water. One unique thing about California City is that there is a map in the agenda package that we provided, and I will find you a BATE number here. It is BATE number 8-127, enclosure 5 to the package. It's a map of the city's first community, and it shows the location of the city's wastewater treatment plant. It's called Water Treatment Plant here on the northeast corner of the community, but also the city's municipal drinking water wells. The city has its own water service, provides water service to the community, but the wells are in town. So the city has indicated in their LAMP that not immediately, maybe not within the first 5 years, but at some point in the future, as development continues to proceed on septic system, to potentially installing a monitoring well, a groundwater monitoring well, between an area that may have a high density of septics and one of these municipal drinking water wells shown in blue on here, just to give an early indication of potential water quality effects. So they've committed to doing that, but they haven't committed to a specific date or time, but it is in their program. And with that, I would recommend that the board approve the local agency management program for California City and be happy to answer any questions.
Yes. Mr. Dias, do you have any questions?
I have no questions. I would like to make a comment that I think the city and our staff have worked very closely on this LAMP. They've done a good job, and it appears to be consistent with the other LAMPs that we've approved prior. Thank you.
Dr. Horn, do you have any questions, comments?
Yeah, just one question. I need to understand, I need to overlay BATE stamp 8127 with your slide of the yellow boxes and the different colored pipelines to understand what's the relationship between the location of the existing city wells and the purple hatched areas. Maybe that's something for the
Well, I can do two things. I can briefly describe from this map here while we look at, that was 127. And essentially, the wells are on the, I'm going to call it the western side of the first community. So they would be essentially on the, see where the red collection system is on the top of this figure?
Yeah.
From the west end of that red system, diagonally down to the southeast is kind of the, where those wells are located. Another option is I had a hidden slide, which is a Google map, sometimes a map, if you would like to look.
I mean, Cache Creek is right here. It's running along the east side of the, so.
There's a hidden slide. Right at the end of the presentation. Right there. Yeah. There is a hidden slide. Basically, it's a Google map, and you will see the developed area. It's just a Google shot showing you, sometimes to me a picture is worth 1,000 words, and it doesn't show specifically the location.
I don't think she has it.
Oh, that doesn't come in. Okay, I do apologize for that. The one we have here doesn't include it. So your question was the relationship of the wells to the density zones. Essentially, the groundwater flows to the north, generally, and the higher density zones, or those zones that have more septic systems, are right immediately to the northeast of where that band of wells are located. So if we go back to the map here, this map shows the main street where there's the band of green collection systems. These are sewer lines, and then there's a purple gray area to the below that. That's one of the zones that is becoming more developed. And if I could just maybe point out graphically, the wells are in this zone.
Well, I can't tell where you're talking. Jay,
yeah,
sorry.
So it's an arc that goes along from the north to the west.
Here you go, Jay.
That is that.
Oh, yes.
Do that.
Absolutely. What Doug is saying here is that on this map, you see the blue Cache Creek that I referred to, and then on page 127, you see the easement, the legal right-of-way that wraps around the east part of the community. That is Cache Creek, or that is the same blue band.
I get that. So this map, where is the green, that little green, the square with the green lines in it here?
That's the golf course, which on this map here is right in the center of the street that wraps around as an oval. Mm-hmm. So zone one is just to the west of the golf course.
I mean, give me P zone three, P zone two, P zone one.
P zone three and P zone, the golf course is right south of P zone three. The golf course is the green area that's shown on bait page 127. So P zone one is the area of town just to the north of the golf course.
This
is Mr. Platt. He's with the city of California City.
Oh, yeah, you can see that.
Yeah.
So they actually run south and north.
Yep.
All in one corridor. So the city wells run north.
State your name.
Oh, I'm Craig Platt, Director of Public Works for California City. So all the city wells are on the west side of the city and run north to south. And separation, they're... If you hadn't knew where Neuralia is, they actually run to the east and west side of Neuralia Road, but that's one of the major roads in and out of California City. It runs all the way out to 14. But they're quite a long ways from Cache Creek. So Cache Creek is to the extreme south.
Those three.
Ms. Horn, if...
This is...
If you could maybe restate your question another way, we can address your concern.
I don't know where
angle.
Noralia Road is. Right. It's not labeled on either of these two maps.
I'll give it a shot. This is Doug Smith, the Assistant Executive Officer. Let me try to walk you through this map that you're seeing in front of you and tell you, and if you pull out this enclosure and have this in front, let me tell you exactly where each well is on that map.
Excellent.
Okay, starting on the upper left with well 14. Well 14 is approximately very close to the upper green line to the northwest below the horizontal red line, okay? Right below the end, the far western side of the end of that horizontal red line.
Are we talking zone 62, zone 67?
It's close to zone 67. It's below, so the well will be very close to that vertical green line.
Thank you.
Okay, and then going down, meaning going south to well 2A, you just follow that vertical line down, and right about the box of zone 40, you know, it's...
43?
43, it's, yeah. That's where well 2A is. And then you can take sort of the upper, that zone 43 or 42, that black box, and the top of that black box is basically lines up with one of the main streets that goes... that runs from west to east across the entire map, pretty much. And that's where, if you go to the east, well 3 is located on that, just a little bit, basically about the center of this map. And then the three wells, well 16, well 15A, and well 10, pretty much go around the southern part of the gray P zone 3. And then following that center horizontal lineament where well 3 is, going to the east all the way essentially to where it intersects the green line that runs vertical is where on this map it's labeled AVEC turnout. And that's another well. And those are the locations of all the...
It's not a well.
Oh, it's not a well. Sorry, then I misread the map.
Water agency.
Okay.
The State Water Project Supply Pipeline.
Okay. Well, at least you know where that is.
Okay.
Now.
So based on what you've just said, it sounds... So I'm... what I took away from that is that the well that could be affected first would be well 3, because that is... in the hatched area, or close to the hatched area.
I would concur that that is one of the wells that is more immediately affected. There's probably a more closer analysis that have to be done to look at which well is actually most impacted. But yes, it has the higher development of septics up gradient of the well, so I'd agree with you in that.
So, is there more to share?
No, that's it. I was just verifying. I just drew them on this map. There.
So under the existing, so with the adoption of this LAMP, and whatever existing protocols are in place, would well 3 be monitored for... I mean, would there be with do we need additional monitoring in order to know whether well 3 is being affected?
Well 3 and all of the other city wells are monitored because they're municipal wells, and that data is provided to Division of Drinking Water. In the 5-year assessment, the city would assemble data from all available sources, including that data. So data from the existing wells would be included with the city's assessment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Sandell, do you have any questions?
My questions have been answered by this discussion about the monitoring of the well, so no, I do not.
And I have no questions. Is there anyone from the public who wishes, has questions?
On the agenda, there's a speaker listed from the city.
Right, Mr. Jerry Helt, the city's engineer, is here to bring a few brief remarks on their perspective.
Yes. Would you come forward?
Thank you, Jay, for a detailed presentation. My name is Jerry Helt. I'm the contract city engineer for the City of California City. We were involved in simulating the LAMP and the details. And when I do it again, I will present a map showing the well locations with the priority zones. My apology. So with that, I'd like to just basically overview the city itself as was determined or presented earlier. Cal City is very large. Matter of fact, it's the third largest city in the state of California in terms of acreage. That's huge. But in terms of population, it's quite small. It, right now, the population runs about 13,000 with a prison population of around 2,300 beds. And when the city was developed back in the, it was conceived in the 50s, and then these developments occurred in the 60s, a lot of the areas at that time went through the subdivision procedures. However, infrastructures at that time were not required, which would not occur today under the current laws. But at that time, developments were allowed to record maps. And matter of fact, Cal City has a record number of recorded maps that have legal lots. If you were to buy one today, it would be just like buying a lot for anywhere else, except it does not have a lot of the infrastructures in place. They developed a system of a way to have subdivision deferred improvement funds to address some of the issues, but sewer was not included. It was the subdivision deferred improvement funds included roads and the access and water. So that's why the issue of the septic systems at that time was developed with this different densities. And over the course of time, lots have developed, and the tracking for this density has occurred, but probably not to the degree that it now is being formulated, which is in the LAMP. Before, it was being done with certain tables through the billing department. However, now, as you can see within the LAMP, we have a detailed summaries of the permits issued and the activity level. And over the last couple of years, and actually over the last several years, Cal City hasn't had a lot of development. And with respect to the septic systems, that's been a plus. With respect to the city's economy, that's not a plus. So we would certainly like to see development occur. The overall picture of Cal City does look bright. The economy, as you know, sometime years past, there's been several setbacks in the economy, and Cal City was one of the major areas that suffered from that with the problems back in the 08 and so on. However, the future does look bright. We look forward to continuing with the Cal City's development, and with the septic system and with the LAMP in place, our plan is to promote the use of sanitary sewer systems. And something that I want to emphasize is that with the approval of this LAMP, this is not the the course for future California City as far as the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to develop the sanitary sewer systems. The city is looking for implementation of impact fees to be able to fund these systems. If the area is being developed with a subdivision, and depending on the location of it, then there would be conversations for providing a sewer septic system. That's already occurred with some of the commercial developments that's been proposed within the city through the cannabis procedures. So that has already started to take shape, whereas before it was more of a do a septic system. And in the meetings that we've had with the various developers and going through the SDR, the subdivision and review committees, and the first thing they'll say is, well, how about a septic system? And I'm probably the first one to give them a different alternative. Well, how about a sanitary sewer system? And it helps. It helps you. It helps the city. It improves the value of the property, reduces the potential problems, and so on. So I just want to let you know that the city is pursuing that option and that procedure so that the LAMP is not a way for continued improvement, but it will provide for the development, considering in the certain areas where we have the septic systems and for replacement of septic systems. And with that, I'd like to conclude with just to let you know that the city itself, as you know, is very large. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to visit Cal City, but sometime, if you would, we'd sure like to show you around. And there's a lot of potential there and a lot of future growth. So with that, I'll pause and answer any questions you may have.
Yes, Mr. Dias.
No questions, thank you.
Dr. Horn.
So I've heard that celebrities are now interested in California City.
Over the course of time, they've had a lot of interest. And it's been an interest from not just that, but from the movie industry and other advertising type industry. So we look forward to developing any way that possible.
But specifically celebrities that are interested in the cannabis business.
That's correct.
And I'm just curious, the location of those activities, are they more likely to be in the first city or the second city?
So far, the potential areas have been in various areas throughout the city. And currently, the ones that are under the most closest development are within the first community, and they are being sewered. Now, another way to provide the sewer in some of these areas where there's an issue with elevations and availability is the city and in the LAMP, you may have seen where we discussed this concept of a grinder pump. And in a couple of these proposed projects, projects are going to install this type of system as opposed to a septic system. And what it means is it's a pressure system that takes the wastewater from the development and then basically is able to deliver it to a sanitary sewer system.
Thank you.
But at the same time, I do have to footnote that there are some developments that are going to utilize the septic system. However, I'd like to bring it up to emphasize only domestic sewage is being accepted for those. Their production water and any other water that's developed from that, they have to dispose of separately.
Okay.
Mr. Sandell.
No questions, thank you.
Thank you.
And I have no questions. Any questions from the public? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the California City LAMP.
I'll second.
Motion and second. We'll do a roll call vote.
Mr. Dias?
Yes.
Member Horn?
Yes.
Member Sandell?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Jardine?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll push on then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 9, revised waste discharge and water recycling requirements for the Hellendale Community Services District, Silver Lakes Wastewater Treatment Plant, San Bernardino County. Number 9.
Good morning, board members. My name is Tom Brown. I'm a staff engineer in the Victorville office. I'm a civil engineer, but I'm also a registered chemical engineer in the state of California. I hold both licenses. Item 9 is a revised individual WDR for the Hellendale Community Service District Wastewater Treatment Plant. For those of you who don't know, this is Kimberly Cox's full-time job. This is where she makes most of her money. And we have in the audience three employees of the plant, so they'll correct me if I say anything wrong about the operation when we go over that. Oh, I press this? Do I advance it with the...
And just kind of point it this way. Hi, this is Elizabeth Barrett. I just wanted to note for the record, while Kimberly Cox is a general manager for the City of Hillendale, she is not voting on this item, and she's not in the room. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. Here's an outline of my talk. I'm going to introduce the treatment plan to you, the diagram, and without the aid of a pointer. Briefly go over the reasons we are revising this individual WDR. History of the groundwater nitrate at the site. A couple of the things that we're including in this new WDR is expanded crop area for cultivation, which we expect to primarily be alfalfa, and some additional monitoring wells, which will be placed. We'll get to that. And a new paradigm of regulation of recycled secondary treated wastewater, which is what we call the nitrogen removal assessment, will be introduced. And then I'll summarize my talk and then give you my recommendation. The Hillendale plant is designed to treat up to 1.2 million gallons per day of municipal wastewater flow. Typically receives 0.36 to 0.45 million gallons per day. That's just based on last year's flow data that we get in the reports. It's a classic 1970s secondary treatment, vintage plant, beautiful vintage plant. Secondary treatment, mind you, is the requirements were established by the Clean Water Act, so that's 30 milligrams per liter BOD, 30 milligrams per liter suspended solids, and greater than 1 milligram per liter DO, and there's no regulation of nitrogen or nitrate on full secondary treatment. There are four groundwater monitoring wells. There's currently only three. Number one has been damaged, and we'll get to that. We're going to ask them to replace that as part of this order. There was a history of nitrate being greater than 10 milligrams per liter as N, and that caught our attention and was one of the reasons that we decided we had to ask them to change the way they were doing things in the disposal practices. However, now I'll get to the graph, the current groundwater concentrations, the nitrate concentrations have settled down. They settled down very rapidly because of a shift from doing sod farming to alfalfa farming. And that occurred 2012, before I was here. I joined the staff in summer of 2012. Here's the plant. Now, board members, if you get out your magnifying glass and look very carefully in the upper right-hand corner where it says office, you'll see Kimberly Cox sweeping the front porch. She likes to keep her plant very neat. She's very proud of it. And that's where Alex and the other operators reside. And that's where the water comes in at the headworks. If you go down, that's to the east of the office, the primary settlers are located. And one of them is online. That's the darker colored one in this photograph. And one of them is offline. After you remove the floaters and the sinkers, you send it over to the trickling filters. Only one's online. That's where most of the BOD is consumed and the COD. These are tall tank-looking things that are open at the top. The water is sprayed down, and there's a honeycomb material that's covered with a gelatinous mass of microbes, and they're doing all the work for BOD conversion and ammonia and TKN conversion. After that, you need clarification. You need physically, not in a literal sense. You settle the flocks. Anything that's shredded off undergoes endogenous decay, and some of the sludge is returned, and the rest of it that is waste is sent to an aerobic digester, and that's in to the west. If you move back up, where it's labeled sludge digester, that's aerobic digestion, so they don't make any gas like a lot of secondary plants will try to capture that gas, like a VVWRA, and they burn it in a generator. The way over to the left, you see there's a lot of room for expansion, but originally the plant had chlorination of the effluent. I think that was pretty widespread. They don't add chlorine anymore, and they don't need to. The current Title 22 requirements for recycled water reuse that's on a fodder crop, you don't need to chlorinate. There are two percolation ponds. You can see them. There's one of them's cut off. They are kept full, and the rest of the water is sent to the farm, which if we go, I have to go to a couple slides. We'll get there. So that's to the south. They currently have 60 acres that they can produce or grow upon. As I mentioned earlier, I'll go over some of the reasons we wanted to revise this WDR. We asked the discharger for a plan and crop management plan to keep track of the nitrogen that's in the effluent and the alfalfa that they're growing. Okay, before they just grew stuff and they leased it to a farmer and he grew sod, and there's just no records of what they were doing, no records of how much fertilizer was being applied. The only thing we could infer, or how much water was being applied, we just don't have any records. And during that period, we had problematic nitrate concentrations in three of the wells. The order will have a time schedule for additional wells and include fixing MW1. I hope this slide doesn't look as blurry on your printout as it does to me, but this gives you 8 years, a little over 7 years. All four wells graphed on one page. The red bar is the nitrate limit, the drinking water limit of 10 milligrams per liter is N. And over toward the earlier times around 2011, there was sporadic jumps above 10 in several of the wells for a period of 3 years. I just picked this period because I wanted to emphasize that since the transition from sod farming to alfalfa, things have settled down. And the response actually was quite rapid. Depth of groundwater here is as little as 15 and as much as 40 feet, and that follows the topography of the site. So this is a good way of seeing how rapidly you can see changes in farming practice and how quickly the concentration changes you can observe in the surrounding groundwater wells. And then a little note to the lower right where I mentioned that MW1 I think it's a broken screen, but we can't get any water out of it. Oops. Back. Here's a bigger layout of the land. In the upper right, you'll see the treatment plant, barely visible. You'll see two ponds. They're darkish colored and labeled pond one and pond two. The surrounding goldenrod area is the existing 60 acres that they're allowed to plant on. And the CSD has bought land to the south. And again, the north arrow is oriented to the right in this diagram. The area in blue is the new property that's been acquired that they will cultivate. So to bring the water, the recycled water, they'll need to install some pipes underneath that road. That's a paved road that separates the golden area from the blue area. That's called Wild Road. And you see the old horse race track. I think the man who owned this previously had horses, bred horses, and ran them. This figure is not up to date. If you were to look at Google Earth, I mean, as far as the infrastructure that's located on that southern portion property, there's the CSD has built parks. I think there's a couple of baseball fields. And there's some solar farms in there that are not indicated in this figure. But they're not going to farm there. Here's an even bigger view of the whole area, including the community, most of the community of Silver Lakes. you can see the trace of the Mojave River in the lower right. The flow of groundwater is trending from, okay, this time the map is oriented with north arrow pointing upward on your figure. The flow of the river is from the southwest to the northeast. You see some monitoring wells that all have excuse me, long names. That's the California DWR designation for them. Those are not owned by the district, but they can get the data from them. And one of the things that we've asked the discharger for is to include those numbers and to create hydrologic surface maps for the whole area. And the flow of the groundwater generally follows that of the river, but the percolation ponds do create a little bit of mounding, and we wanted them to graph in two dimensions the hydrologic surface. It's a way, standard way that hydrogeologists keep track of any potential contaminant movement. So the four wells are indicated, 1, 2, 3, and 4. The big red circles are the approximate locations we would like additional wells. We talked to the discharger about this, and we came to an agreement that 3 would be nice. The one in the upper left, proposed one, we wanted to get away from a well that was away from any potential impacts, human impacts, because the whole west of the site used to be farming, and we had some suspicions that MW4's concentrations may be compromised because of that. So they said, okay, we'll give you a new well, and that will be a little bit deeper because the ground is hilly up in that direction. And you see, okay, that's enough on that. Okay, here is alfalfa to the rescue. This inequality is what Water Board staff came up with as a simple way of protecting groundwater and keeping track of the amount of nitrogen that's being discharged to land, in this case a crop. The upper right hand corner, that is an actual photograph that I took from in late November of the alfalfa fields. They remain green. They're just not harvested usually in this region. They first cutting is usually in March or April, but they have cuttings all the way to November and sometimes December, and the amount of alfalfa is declines, and except maybe in a month in the summer you'll have a bigger yield that month compared to the March cutting, but the March cutting is usually the biggest. So the left-hand side of the equation is we ask them, the discharger, to keep track of the mass of nitrogen above 10 milligrams per liter. The logic behind this is that we have noticed at many other sites that nitrogen in its reduced forms continues to convert to nitrate as it percolates through the groundwater. The bacteria are there, the food is there, and they'll do this until DO reaches about 0.3 milligrams per liter. So that's why tracking just one constituent is not good enough. Just tracking nitrate is not good enough to be protective of groundwater quality. You got to look at the other species because they may convert. Now, we also know that the soils that we have out here are not good at removing anions, and that's just a fact of life we got to live with. So you don't get much attenuation of nitrate as it moves toward the groundwater. So this is conservative because this assumes that we'll let them have the 10 because we know if it doesn't convert to all of it, it'll still be less than 10. If all the nitrogen doesn't convert, it will still be less than 10. The right-hand side of the inequality is the amount of nitrogen that is removed by alfalfa. And there's actually very good science supporting this because there's been so much work in alfalfa in the state of California. And just as a reminder, total nitrogen in that expression is the organic N plus ammonia, that's TKN, total Kjeldahl nitrogen, is a simple test, plus the nitrate and the nitrite. Nitrite is usually a very short-lived species. in most environments, especially in wastewater plants, we rarely see it above 1 milligrams per liter in the effluent. The average effluent is about 5.5, by the way. So within that, since things have settled down, it's about 5.5. And so we don't expect that. If it just stayed at nitrate, we would never have a problem. But we've got proof that there's been a problem, and we have very good evidence that it's the reduced forms of nitrogen that are still being converted by the bacteria. Here's the same inequality, but it's now got a lot of math into it. So bear with me and take this slow. So total effluent N minus 10 is the amount of total nitrogen above 10. Q is the flow, the effluent flow of the plant. So we're assuming that because all of it is going to ground, even that in the percolation pond, this is the most conservative way of calculating the threat to water quality. 8.34 is just a conversion factor. It happens to be the pounds in a gallon, but that's just a coincidence. It's that liters times pounds divided by milligrams divided by millions of gallons. The right-hand side, the nitrogen conversion factor or nitrogen uptake factor that we're using is 60 pounds per dry ton of alfalfa. We got that from a UC Davis book, a compendium on alfalfa production in California, so we feel that's a very reliable number. We've also checked, for those of you who are familiar with the LA County Sand District, I'm barely familiar with it. I hope the board members are more familiar with it. But they give us very detailed quarterly reports on nitrogen uptake by their alfalfa, and they do tissue sampling. And just a few calculations, we bracket this number. We're around sometimes more, sometimes less, but we wanted to keep this simple. So we know we're going with this number. We recommend this number. On the right, back to the right-hand side, the discharger will need to calculate or keep track of their yield, the dry tons, and Jay decided to break this down by bale, but however you do it, we need to express the alfalfa yield in dry tons. So tons of alfalfa divided by bale, which is a small number. Number of bales per cutting, so just keep track of it, and the cuttings per year. So that gives you the amount of nitrogen that the alfalfa will take up that year. And I cite my source below. Here I've summarized the requirements in the order, all of them. In the first year, excuse me, the discharger has to keep track of their discharge, which they've been doing. That's no change for them. And what the farmer is doing. So now the yield of the crop becomes important to water board staff. We will include this in our inspections. And they have to have a crop plan. Is that what's in there? No, okay. Oh, the irrigation, where the order specifies that by June of 2020, they'll have to have the lower 35 in production. So, and a one-time crop plan. And if they're going to change crops, they have to give us the nitrogen uptake factor. So we'll be, if they want to keep the crop healthy and free of disease, they should rotate it. But we're not telling them to do it, but we're recommending that they try to grow a healthy crop. We're also expecting a work plan for the three new wells and the replacement of MW1, and we'll continue with quarterly monitoring. That's all part of the WDR. With all of that, I recommend that the board members adopt these revised WDRs for the Hallandale CSD.
First, any questions?
Do you have any questions?
Mr. Dias.
Yes, thank you. What is the depth to groundwater under the treatment plant?
About 30 to 35, because MW4, which is in the upper, which is east corner, is about 40-ish.
Okay, thank you. No more questions.
Dr. Horn.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Looking at the graph on the slide number six, the two highest, the two wells with the highest level of nitrate are numbers 2 and 4, which are on the north side of the existing agricultural field. No, west side.
West, yeah. 2 is southwest, and 4 is northwest.
So I'm trying to understand why. I mean, I was assuming groundwater flow would be towards wells 3 and 1.
I agree.
So why is the nitrate higher in 4 and 2?
Well, at 2, there are a couple of things that could contribute to that. Across the road, they did a investigation, and they did a hydro punch and found a hit of 18.
Oh.
And so they're blaming farming to the west.
Existing farming or legacy
farming?
Okay.
And since we have no records of how long it was farmed, how much fertilizer was applied, we suspect that we concurred with their interpretation. 4 is peculiar. Dr. Horn, it bothered us. Some of the trends, and at first I thought it was the mounding, but with only one extra data point, I thought, well, how could mounding be driving things in that direction? I was dismissed. But the fact that things settled down, I think, is what's most important. I didn't bring the data that was prior to that, where it just shows how much it jumps around, but I have that. Yeah, I have no better answer if anybody. Jay, do you want to take a crack? Patrice, you want to take a crack?
Let me just say that the reason I'm asking is I need to be convinced that with the existing monitoring wells and the approximate locations of new monitoring wells that we have sufficient safeguards here.
One of the safeguards, Patrice Copeland, Division Manager for Victorville, one of the safeguards that in that area is there's no real development up there right now. And the direction of flow, I'm pretty confident that we would catch anything if it happened. I think one of the answers for well 4 could be naturally occurring deposits, geologic formation with high nitrates. And it's not impossible. It could happen. In order to really answer the question, they would have to do a study. And because of the fact that there's no real development right there, it really didn't seem to merit the money. You know, the squeeze isn't worth the juice. Right there.
Further questions, Dr. Horn? Mr. Sandell.
Is it possible that you could give us a filled-in example of the inequality?
Sure.
What's the left number and what's the number of bales?
If they could get a meager 4 tons per year dry yield, let's see, is that per amper? Yeah, it's dry. Yeah, that's per year per acre, and I've looked at 50% up to 90% of that land, that 95 acres cultivated. They would easily be in compliance, like a factor of 4 to a factor of 1.5. Like they would be, the alfalfa would be removing 4 times the amount they're discharging, the alfalfa would be removing 1.5 times the amount they're discharging. Their last quarter of their last year had more ammonia than I've ever seen before, so their total effluent N was around 25, and even with a conservative yield and 80% in cultivation, they would still be in compliance.
Great. Thank you.
I have no questions. Anyone from the public who has questions? I have one speaker card, and that is Alex Alves.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Alex Aviles. I'm the operations manager for the Hellendale CSD Wastewater Division. I just wanted to show my gratitude to the Lahontan board and staff, especially Patrice, Jay, and Tom for all the work that they've done on this. We've gone back and forth, and I'm very pleased with where we're at on the proposed WDR. You know, it allows us to continue treating the wastewater from our community, at the same time protecting the groundwater and doing that with minimal adjustments to our budget. And I just wanted to show my gratitude and appreciation for that.
Well, thank you. Any questions, comments? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Now, recommended action is to adopt the order.
I move that we adopt the order.
There's a motion on the floor.
I'll second the motion.
There's a second. And roll call vote.
Member Dias?
Aye.
Member Horn?
Aye. I, whatever Keith says. If he says yes, then I say yes. If he says aye, then I say aye.
Member Sandel?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jardine?
Aye. Trying to get along. I'll move now to item 10, Indian Wells Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan.
Good morning, Vice Chair and members of the board. I'm Bruce Warden. I'm an environmental scientist in the South Lake Tahoe office. I'm here to present the Indian Wells Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, or actually, more correctly, I'm introducing a hydrogeologist consulting with the Indian Wells Valley Water District who will do the actual presentation. But what I'd like to do is just go over some of the big picture items very quickly. All right, so this is our agenda for this. Big picture item is SGMA and groundwater sustainability. They are, they being the Indian Wells Valley and all water users there, they are water body that has been in deficit for probably since the 60s. Is that right, Tim? Probably documented way back then, losing about maybe a foot to a foot and a half per year. So this is an ongoing problem, and in the big picture, I think this is where part of the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan comes in. Recycled water policy is more concerned with using all of the wastewater from the community, which in analysis they do during drought years when there's good conservation. Pretty much 2 years ago, they used 100% of the water on a golf course, alfalfa fields, and a regulatory requirement to maintain their Mojave Tui chub population and the Naval Air Weapons Station. In terms of the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan itself, we've been working on this for a number of years, been through a few iterations. It meets all the requirements of the state board in terms of what should be in a salt and nutrient management plan. They did a really good job with limited resources to put together a model that adequately describes the basin. And in the big picture, the same analysis can be used for avoiding undesirable results in development of the groundwater sustainability plan. So same model, loading model, anti-degradation analysis, all of that could be used towards that larger goal. Just this is a kind of a fun picture. Here's the on the Naval Air Weapons Station, their ponds. On the right is Mojave Tui chub, where ditches are filled across the Naval Air Weapons Station from the groundwater, shallow groundwater flow from the ponds, and they are required by California Department of Fish and Wildlife to maintain that. So that's, even though that doesn't count as recycled water use because it flows through the soil, it is a regulatory requirement that factors into that. And I think we go to the Tim's presentation now, is that right? Okay. Tim Parker?
And Mr. Parker, you represent
Hi, yes, and as Bruce introduced me, my name's Tim Parker, and I'm a licensed professional geologist, certified engineering geologist, and certified hydrogeologist, not an engineer, in the state of California. And I'm here on behalf of Indian Wells Valley Water District, and also on the city who both funded this study. And the study was largely conducted by Woodward and Curran, as you can see on the slide, and working with myself, the district, and the technical advisory committee that's in place there. So I'm going to give you a sort of a background, talk about the setting, and then more details on the salt nutrient management plan, and then also talk a little bit about some of the groundwater management activities that are occurring thanks to SGMA. And so, let's see. Okay, got it. Okay, so this started, groundwater management really started back in the early 90s, back in the Indian Wells Valley, when they realized, you know, they had this groundwater decline occurring, and it was pretty constant, and fortunately not too quick, but pretty constant. And so they formed a cooperative group, and that consisted of, and I should say, this is really a Navy town. And so it's the Navy in the desert with fish, as a kind of a, and alfalfa, and with a more recent addition of pistachios, which I'll get into. And so it's the city, Kern County Water Agency, Indian Wells Valley Water District, the Navy, and just let me stop one moment and say, and if you have questions, the general manager of Indian Wells Valley Water District's here, which of course, he'll take anything that I can't, but I wanted to introduce Don Zadiba as well. And then also the Eastern Kern County Resource Conservation District, the Bureau of Land Management, and agriculture, pistachio growers and alfalfa growers were all part of this early effort, which also had a technical advisory committee. Now that's transitioned to a groundwater sustainability agency, which was formed in, what was it? Was it really late 2016? Yeah, yeah. And so that's been a transition that's ongoing, and they've formed a public advisory committee, a policy advisory committee, and a technical advisory committee to get the work on the SGMA going, and they've hired a water resources manager. And so a little bit on some of the initial objectives of the Cooperative Groundwater Management Group. Pretty logical, trying to limit the large-scale pumping and distribute it more evenly so we didn't have these depressions. There were a couple of depressions that formed. And